Hi, welcome to Romance Happy Hour. I'm Dylan Crush.
And I'm Dawn Ludeke.
We're bringing you your favorite romance authors.
You'll get to hear them read from their books and answer your questions.
Now let's get on with the show.
And we're live, Dawn here with Romance Happy Hour. We are clearly missing Dylan tonight, but Miss Cameron Clare has graciously volunteered to co-host with me tonight. Cameron, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yes, thanks for having me. I love hanging out.
I know, we love having you. And Lainey, you are back too. Welcome.
I love you guys. I would come every week.
We love you guys too. Oh my gosh, you guys are some of our favorite authors. So I'm so glad you guys are joining us tonight. It is a crazy night for you, Lainey, right? You have a world that you are working in, right?
Yeah, I'm working with four other authors to create a whole new world. It's called Forklick, New York. It exists in the Catskills. It's near Climax and down the road from Coxsackie, you know.
So we've created
this family of five siblings, and each of us is writing a book about one of the siblings and sort of the aftermath of what happens when the grandfather dies and leaves a substantial amount of debt for the family to deal with.
Okay. And so what's the town name again?
Forklick.
Forklick. Okay. Yeah. And so interesting, does it have anything to do with food? Because that's what I was thinking.
So the series is called Farm to Forking, and okay. There will be some food in it, yes. But I mean, you can imagine licking any kind of fork that you wish to imagine with the tongue.
Okay, so those kind of forks. Okay.
Didn't you guys have, like, did you do a cover reveal recently, or was it just a series reveal?
We did the whole series reveal a couple of weeks ago, so we revealed all five of the covers. Kate from Y'all That Graphic did our covers, and it was really exciting to work with her because so many really big of my favorite authors have worked with her. And it's just been so cool and so different from any other book I've ever written, because we're really writing them together. We hop on a call like this once a week and plot. And, you know, anytime another character has dialogue in my book, that author is kind of, you know, providing that dialogue. So we're really in each other's books. It really feels like co-writing, and I had never done that before, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I did a world once, and I was not near. I mean, there was like just a basic outline, like have this in your book. But that's like in depth, like your dialogue is matching up. That's pretty cool.
Well, we really wanted there to be series read through. Like, we want people to feel like they have to read all five of them. And so, yeah, we tried to make each of them feel like you have to keep going to the next one.
Yeah.
When's your guys's, what's the time frame for release?
We're going to do one at a time, starting, I'm book one, and mine comes out May 9th. That's correct. Yeah. Because my birthday is May 12th, but the book comes out May 9th.
Now, what is the time frame for release? Are you going to do like once a month, or every couple weeks, every week, or?
One a month from May through September. So my book is called Since You've Been Gone, because it's a soybean farm. And mine will be May 9th. And then the next one is Liz Alden, and hers is Butter You Up. And she'll come out in June. I can't do the math of all the release specific dates. And then in July, Karen Gray will do, I should pull it up. Oh my gosh. I just want to make sure I get all the titles right. Because they're all, of course, silly and ridiculous titles. Karen's is For Fork's Sake. And then Erin Mallon is doing Bringing Home the Bacon in August. And Ember Lee has A Fork in the Road coming out in September.
Fun.
Yeah.
And we love all those names. I think we haven't had a couple of those names on the show, so you should tell them, hey, sign up. But yeah, we've hosted. Oh, there's Dylan. Hi, Dylan. We miss you.
Dylan. Hello.
Tell them about us, our show. Let me have them come on closer to the release.
I will. Yeah. You know, Erin Mallon is a big deal. Yeah. I think Ember might also be new to Romance Happy Hour. So I'll make sure that she knows that she should reach out.
And is that all you're working on, or do you have other things that you're working on currently?
I made a mistake with scheduling this year, man. I wrote two books at the same time. So I wrote my Shared World book, and I have another book actually coming out in April that's sort of a continuation of my Bridges and Bitters series. I don't know how people rapid release. It's about killing me dead to have an April release and a May release. Oh my goodness. And then I'll do another sort of just like, easy is the wrong word, but whenever I need like a break from more challenging writing, I return to my Stag Brothers books. So I'll write like an angsty new adult sports romance to break things up later this summer.
Yeah. Who doesn't love a sports romance? An angst.
You just need the angst.
Yeah. What about you, Cameron? What are you working on?
I am writing the second book in a new series. So it's kind of weird. The first book has already been released, but it's not released. It's weird. It's been released, but it's been not been released. It's going to be retitled and rebranded because it was part of a collaboration. The collaboration kind of got messed up. So that's a totally different offline story. I'm working on the second book in that series, and it's a Hollywood family. So this is the twin brother of the, you know, the big action hero heartthrob. This is the twin brother who is the like daredevil adrenaline junkie stunt guy.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So it's so funny because I have had to do a ton of research to understand some of these daredevil things that I myself would never do. So it's been really funny that all the research I've had to do to understand what these people, how they get their kicks and their, you know, their rushes. And then, of course, I'm reading about it, which it doesn't sound nearly as death-defying as like the stuff you see on TV, which of course they're on TV. So I'm trying to like, okay, will this be realistic? And I finally told my friends, I was like, I don't know what, no, most of my readers are not going to be like down in the weeds being like, oh, that wasn't really, you know, death-defying. So I just need to remove that mental block and write it instead of worrying about all the intricacies of jumping off cliffs and out of airplanes. And I saw yesterday, I happened to see a video yesterday that I was like, ooh, I'm going to write this. Apparently one of the adrenaline junkie things to do is to go up in a hot air balloon and then come out of the hot air balloon onto a giant trampoline that is attached to the bottom of the hot air balloon. And then they jump, and then they fly out and, you know, with their little parachutes.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, they're doing that.
I've never seen it before. I feel like it would be... Go ahead, Lainey.
I was just going to say, I find it so interesting that it seems extreme to you because I know that you're a military person, and I'm like, that is already so daring.
No. I was Air Force.
Airplanes.
I didn't jump out of airplanes. I sat on a computer at the ground and told them where to fly. Well, actually, I did not do that either, but I did it.
Yeah.
No.
I think I would be scared to be the person in the hot air balloon when it's like, if there's somebody on a trampoline below it, like attached to it, and then your hot air balloon's going like, it's gotta be right. Like
somebody had posted a comment, and I didn't read in depth on this or anything, but somebody had posted a comment about how, like, you know, if you go up with like 10 people and you have this trampoline and everything attached to your rig, right, as they start bailing out, the hot air balloon pilot, I guess is the name of it. You know, he has to start dumping fuel because otherwise he would, you know, the amount of fuel that he had to get 10 people up in the air as they start jumping out, that lack of weight, he would start just, I guess, catastrophically
shooting up. Ooh.
Yeah. So,
that was interesting, but I'm not going to write about that part.
Yeah.
My research has led me more into, like, I'm deep in farrier talk. on TikTok now because, of course, we're writing all these farm people. And there are some hot horseshoe workers on TikTok, man. And there are farriers. Yeah. There's farriers for camels because they have hooves. And we're just, oh my gosh, I am learning so many things about the care and keeping of hooves. And I love every minute of it.
Do they do it for donkeys too? And like mules, pack mules?
There must be. And, you know, now you're sending me in a brand new piece of the algorithm that I can't wait to look for.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I know, at least for pack mules for sure. Yeah.
Well, and Lainey, I know you always like have humor sprinkled into your stuff. So there is this, again, some video, I don't know if I doubt it was on TikTok, but some video that I watched, there's this woman that has a farm that she has this donkey that she always like features in her reels, and she gets them the long, you know, rubber chickens that make noise when you squeak them. And like, that's her videos are all like giving this donkey squeaky chickens that he loves to like thrash around with.
I cannot wait. Oh my gosh.
Potentially sneak a donkey into your story.
Yeah. Well, we have this group in Pittsburgh called Allegheny Goatscape. And what they do is like the city hires these goats to, you know, Pittsburgh is very hilly terrain and it's hard to get workers up there. So they'll send the goats up to chew away the invasive weeds that are like threatening erosion and making things crumble. So I've been kind of hanging out with these goats in the city as well. I love it.
I was just actually, so this spinning onto goats here. We were having goat cheese today. My kids, my husband. And yeah, my kids are in 4-H here. We're not doing goats, but some of their good friends are showing goats. And I'm just like, okay, so if they're making cheese, you just send them, tell them to send the cheese samples our way so we can sample their goat cheese.
Quality control.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, yeah. Quality for control for your goat cheese. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, we used to have some when we were little. We were in 4-H and, you know, all that. Had horses, goats, sheep. We showed sheep. And when I tell the story about my childhood, I always say we used to play race the goat and dodge the sheep. And those were like our kid games that we would play after school and stuff like that. The goat would wait for us to get home. And then we'd have these races with him or her. And then the sheep were just such little B words trying to be nice here, Dylan. Just so you know, I didn't say the B word out loud. That they would just come at us like trying to headbutt us, and the game was to see how far you could get into the pin before you got hit by the sheep. So anyway,
Dawn, you're gonna really like the chapter I'm about to read because there's a pesky sheep.
yes oh my gosh, I've been there, done that. That's awesome. So speaking of which, did you want to pop up there and read, or do you want to chat
some
more?
Yeah, I'll do it.
You. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, here we go. All
right, we're going to put Lainey up here.
So, again, my book is called Since You've Been Gone, and it's book one in the Farm to Forking series. And I'm going to read chapter one, which is told from the hero's perspective. Ethan is his name. And I'm just going to get into it. I forgot to bring the sheep. I scratch uncomfortably at my button-down shirt collar, unused to wearing clothes I have to keep clean. And I stare at my brother Samuel, who glowers. You had one job, Ethan. I could punch him. I could kick him. I could explain that actually I had weeks worth of jobs leading up to this moment, including hours of phone calls to cancel granddad's accounts and prepping things for spring planting. I could ask my brother why he didn't just go and get the darn sheep. But I don't do any of those things. Instead, I silently walk out of the lawyer's office. I climb back into my dead grandfather's pickup and drive home to fetch Gran's beloved Merino, Barbara Streisand. Gran asked Granddad years ago to build a palace for her pet sheep. At least that's how I'd see the decked-out shed stationed 1 foot from the front door of their home. Should I call it Gran's home now? Gran is alone after decades of marriage. Well, she's with my siblings temporarily. I park the truck by the sheep shed and pray the little bugger cooperates. Hey, Barbara, I whisper, trying my best to sound approachable. Hey, girl, I'm just going to pick you up, okay? I walk toward the cowering, pampered animal currently munching organic Timothy hay that Gran orders special from the Pacific Northwest. Not sure why she doesn't patronize a local farm or why we don't grow it ourselves right here in Fork Lick, but the fact of the matter is this sheep is spoiled. Too good for Catskills hay. Too good for a barn. Too muddy for me to be hauling around in my only suit. Barbara looks me in the eye and flicks her tail. She stiffens, like she knows I'm about to lunge. We have to go to town, girl. I try to exude calm and move slowly. I lean right. Barbara scoots left. Shh, come on now. I take a few breaths and whip out my hand, but she's too fast for me. Her hooves kick up filth as she runs tight circles around my legs, smearing me with muck. Damn it, Barbara! She catches me behind the knees and I surge forward, but her own tight laps are her undoing because I get an arm around her neck on my way down. Ha! Gotcha! I growl as I heft Barbara into my arms, realizing I'm 32 years old and I don't even know how to clean an outfit like this. I shove Barbara into the back seat of the cab, knowing Granddad would roll in his grave if he saw me put Gran's pet menace in the bed of the pickup. By the time I get back to the lawyer's office, my siblings have all seen fit to show up, and they all frown at me as I walk in, like I made the proceedings late on purpose. I have the sheep, I snarl, tossing a glare at Samuel and easing my expression when I see Gran's watery smile and my sister Colleen, Samuel's twin, clutching Gran's hand. Lionel, the only lawyer in Fork Lick, clears his throat and looks up at me from his Coke bottle glasses. The horn-rim frames blend in with his dark brown skin and give him the appearance of wearing aviator goggles. Heck, he probably did fly planes with Amelia Earhart. There are no more chairs, so I stand in the back of the cramped room with one hand on Barbara's head, the other trying to brush hay and dirt from my suit coat. Thank you all for being here, Lionel says. As you know, we've gathered to read the last will and testament of Eugene Bed. Lionel licks his lips, and I force myself not to stare at the white goo at the corners of his mouth. First, to Eugene's beloved wife, Ethel, Eugene has left the farmhouse and acre of land surrounding. He notes you were the love of his life, and he wants you to always know the comfort of your home and the land you shared together. Gran whimpers, and my brother Alexander leans across to squeeze her other hand. He drapes an arm around her shoulder and swallows, but his eyes are focused on a spot on the floor where Barbara has dropped a deuce. Lionel glances at the sheep. I know this is unusual, and I thank you for providing transportation to Barbara Streisand Bed. Eugene has bequeathed $5,000 toward Barbara's care and keeping, to include the services of a specialty groomer to shear Barbara twice a year and prepare the fleece for carding, spinning, and eventual knitting by Ethel. Gran sobs and buries her face in Colleen's shoulder. I glare at Alex, who reaches up to scratch his ear with the middle finger of his right hand. At this point, Lionel sets his papers down on his desk. He folds his thick hands and sighs. Folks, I've known your family a long time. I'm truly sorry we lost Eugene so soon, especially given all that you've been through over the years. I stifle a groan and cross my arms. Out with it. Jackson and Alex glare at me and I roll my eyes. Sorry, Lionel, please just be straight with us. What's in the will? Lionel coughs. Well, as you can imagine, Eugene wanted to leave everything to you kids. He raised you as his own, along with you, Ethel, of course. Gran dabs at her eyes with a hanky. I grind my teeth together, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Lionel leans back in his chair. You all have tended this land for generations. Eugene specified that he knew you'd continue to steward the land as he had done. But, Samuel leans forward in his chair, sparing a pat on the head for Barbara. Lionel cringes. I'm not sure if you're aware that in recent years, Eugene leveraged the farm heavily to secure loans for new equipment, supplies, and that sort of thing. Gran nods. I knew there were troubles. Lionel smiles tightly. The outstanding loans and mortgages on the property total over $750,000. Colleen gasps, and Alexander's eyebrows fly up. I'm sure mine do the same. Lionel continues. This debt will need to be addressed before the estate can fully transfer. We do have someone from the loan holder in New York City who's come up here to meet with you about your options. I'm afraid it's beyond the scope of what we can offer here at Forklick Legal Services. My brother Jackson looks around and sputters. You're telling me Bedfellow Farms owes almost $1 million to the bank, and this is the first we're hearing of it? I narrow my eyes at my brother, the rock star. What's $1 million to you? Jackson whips his head toward me, looking aghast. A lot, considering all my money's tied up in investments right now. Before I can press the issue, Lionel smiles empathetically and continues. I know this comes as a shock. Eugene always did try to keep his business private. Alex glares at me. You're the great and mighty heir. You telling me you didn't take a single look at the finances while you're over there picking up the reins? What's that supposed to mean? I press off the wall so I'm standing upright in a small pile of sheep droppings. Alex rolls his eyes. Come on, Ethan. We all know you did everything Granddad told you to. You seriously had no idea any of this was going on. You're darn right I did what Granddad suggested. And no, I don't know about the finances because I've been a little busy tilling 500 acres of soybeans. Boys, please. Gran slaps the wooden arms of her chair and we all shut up. You sound like oil and vinegar, always separating. We need to blend together and figure this out. Lionel, I apologize for my grandsons losing their temper. You know I raised them better than that. Sorry, sir, Alexander offers and turns to Gran. I'm just upset. Of course you are, baby. Gran pats his hand. Lionel, where's this banker? What do we need to do next? Lionel smiles and opens a door for a woman who slides into the crowded room. I sink back against the wall, feeling the blood rush out of my head at the sight of someone I spent the last decade trying to forget. Samuel guffaws when he sees her. Leah Thorne, what brings you back to town? She clasps her hands at the front of her gray pencil skirt, looking perfectly at ease in her office attire, her dark hair tied back in a fancy-looking twist. I'm a financial advisor with Burgess and Bowers. I'm here to work with your family to avoid foreclosure proceedings. The oxygen leaves the room at her words, and everyone stares at her. Even Jackson wipes a smirk from his face as my high school sweetheart reveals she's in on the debt situation. You knew. My voice is hoarse, like I've actually been screaming instead of just mentally shouting at the imaginary ants currently agitating my pants. Leah has the decency to wince at that, but she nods. I was, of course, not at liberty to discuss Eugene's private financial dealings as one of our clients, but you knew we were about to lose the whole farm, and you let us find it out from Lionel, crammed in a tiny room with a merino sheep, pooping on the low-pile carpet? Leah's eyes go wide, like she's only just realized I'm here. Or maybe she's only just remembering how she left me after promising to love me forever. It was supposed to be me and her taking over this farm, at the helm, riding a John Deere off into our sunset together. I'm sorry, Ethan. Unbelievable. This time, nobody scolds me when I shout. I look around the room one final time, shake my head, and shoulder my way past Leah and out the door. I don't care how they get the sheep home. I climb into Granddad's truck and drive away. And that is the end of chapter one.
So good. Yay.
Thanks.
I didn't want you to stop, actually. I was like, I hope this isn't where she's stopping. Like, they're just getting there. I want to banter. I want to read the banter that's going to probably inevitably happen next, I'm guessing.
You're going to have to wait for May 9th.
For sure. Awesome. I loved it.
Thank you.
Cameron, are you reading questions or did you want me to do that?
I read through them, but I didn't know that you wanted me to grab them, but I can read them.
No, yes. I can grab them and I'll put them up and then
that's good because I don't know how to do that.
I wasn't sure how Dylan has you. Like you've mostly worked with her on the show, so I'm like, okay. Yeah.
I wasn't actually empowered at all. Oh, I'm here to banter.
Oh, I love the banter. Yes, the banter's great. Perfect. Okay. How long on average does it take you to write a book? So Lainey, we'll start with you. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to spend 1 month planning, 1 month writing, and 1 month revising. So I aim to release 4 a year. And my planning has gotten a lot more intense the more I go on. Like, I do a lot more planning before I start writing these days.
So you're a plotter for sure.
I am a plotter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm type A everything. Even my blood type is A.
I love that. Oh my gosh, that's funny. Yeah, what about you, Cameron?
Oh no, I'm a 100% pantser, which is actually very interesting because you say that you're a type A. I am a very much a type A, and my career, I was an engineer and then a program manager. So I'm very much like da-da-da-da-da. And when I first started writing, the romance beats and the beat sheets and the save the cat and all of, like, any way you could possibly attempt to formula your writing, I tried, and it stifled everything. So for some reason, I am very when it comes to my writing, it's nothing to do with my professional life as well. It's a totally different professional thought process.
Yeah.
So I guess my question now is, like, how many times do you have to edit after you're done with because I'm curious if there's a difference in the amount of edits that you do after you're done writing it versus, like, plotter versus pantser. So it's a good time to ask.
That's a really hard one. Again, I think it depends on the book. Like, so this one that I wrote really collaboratively, my editing process was that my co-authors read the draft first and offered, you know, critiques before our editor saw it. And I honestly felt like by the time the editor got it, it was a pretty light lift. I knew, just because, again, we had done so much of the plotting together, I just really knew who these people were and I knew where they were going.
Did you have a critique partner working with you throughout the book, like while you were still writing it?
I can't do that. It's like someone seeing me naked. I just can't. No, I waited till I had a draft to send them.
Yeah.
Do you, since you plot it out, this is why I don't think it works for me. Do you ever, like, okay, so this is supposed to happen, then this is going to happen, then this is going to happen, and then as you're writing it, the characters are just like, nope, not going to go there. I'm not going there. I'm not doing that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, that happens. Or, like, I'll find out that I had a fact really wrong about the sheep, and that will change everything. But for the most part, just the general, like, I know what I need to be happening emotionally in each scene and chapter.
Yeah.
And so the plot specific stuff that can change a little bit and it doesn't mess things up too bad.
Nice.
How about you, Dawn? How long does it take you to write? And are you a plotter or a pantser?
I'm a plantser for sure. I try to plot, but pantsing just comes out. And honestly, once I kind of get going, it depends on the length of the book. Honestly, if I'm doing a novella, it could take me like 2 weeks. If I'm doing a full length, anywhere from a month to two, I can probably average usually about 2,000 words a day, sometimes 5, 8 max. I'm not like some of these other authors who've been on the show that are like 30,000 words in one day. Like, I can't do that.
Oh,
about you, Cameron? Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure, though? Are you sure it was 30,000?
Wow. Good for them.
Yeah.
If I'm knee deep in the story, I'll average probably around 4,000 words a day is my average. Yeah. I've done as much as 10. But that's if I'm in the knee deep. Right now, this one, I'm struggling for some reason because of all the, like, because me writing about something I don't understand at all. So it's been trickling badly.
How many do you do a year, Cameron?
So most of my stuff is, my stuff is primarily novella length. I started off with short stories and now on average, my stories are ending at around 25 to 30,000 words. So they're getting longer as I go, especially if they're in a series, they've been getting longer. So I think right now I have 17 planned for this year.
Woo! Wow.
Yeah, that's actually a lot less than last year or the year before. So
wow, that's great. See, my books are getting shorter as I go on. Like I started out in the 75,000 range.
Yeah.
And now I'm like settling into 45, 50,000 words for a book length. And I'm really liking that length.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that length as well. I think I started in the 90s, right? So, cause I thought like, okay, well I want single title, you know? And so I need to get that $90,000 word count, or $1,000. I wish it was a $90,000 word count. Yeah, this is the real estate talking. $90,000 is like a cheap ass house right there. But the 90,000 word count. And now I'm just like, novella's good. Okay, let's get this done. Let's get it out. But yeah, this next one that I'm working on though is gonna be a lot longer. So I think it's gonna kind of probably come out in the 80,000 range. So once it's done, but that I'm getting back to basics with my American historicals. So, and that's where the fun is for me. Cause
I love those with your like wild ladies. Yeah. Sometimes in pants.
I know. I love it so much. I like to write women who test the boundaries.
Yeah. I love to read it.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dylan says the shorter reads really let the romance take front and center, and that's totally true, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why my length has lengthened, is because when I was writing just the shorts, it was literally just like that couple, and I didn't let anybody else come in because I didn't want them to like make it longer. But then when you write in a series, you have to let everybody kind of like show a little bit of their personality, so it just gets longer and longer and longer.
Yeah, I kind of have this is kind of a spinoff question, but what is one lesson that you've kind of learned that from your first start, when you first started writing, that you're like, oh shoot, that was like a faux pas. I didn't know I did something wrong there. It's not necessarily wrong, but like for me, an example would be like, I had multiple POVs in my first book. Like I even had like just random characters, POVs. Uh-huh. And then I was like, oh, okay, I can't do that. I got to take some things out. So what is one lesson that you learned from your very first book to now that just kind of pops up?
So my first ever series was kind of a fluke. The Stagg Brothers, the original three brothers books, I planned all of them out in my head before I sat down and wrote them. And I knew each of the brothers, like I knew who they were going to be with. I knew who the best friends were going to be. Like I just knew all these things about these people before I started writing. And then probably my next two series, I wasn't pantsing, but it was just a lot less preparation. I didn't know everybody's wounds. Like I didn't know as much about them. And now the more I go on, like when I start a series, especially this Farm to Forking series, like we planned everybody's wound and situation and which siblings, you know, the sibling dynamics, you know, so we really had all that kind of ironed out, and it makes the writing of it so much easier because I know these people better. And the characters are so important to the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope, I don't have the power. So I was going to go to Dylan's question about how did y'all come up with the idea for the series? And because that's going to lead me into a question that I have for you, Lainey.
There we go. It was Liz Alden who said the phrase farm to forking. A bunch of us had decided at that RAM where we were at in person, Cameron and Dylan was there, that we wanted to do a shared world. And, you know, here it is 2 years later that we had time in our writing schedule to make it happen. And so we had probably two or three meetings where we just sat around and chatted. What did we want this world to be? Was it going to be a summer camp? Was it going to be a farm to table situation kind of went, we knew it was called Farm to Forking. It had to have that name. And so we just sort of built the world from there.
So I know you, me and you are very well versed with each other because of Kickstarter, and you have been like invaluable to me from my very first Kickstarter on. So do you guys already have a Kickstarter plan for this series?
I know we do. Yes, we do. That's kind of just in the kernel stage right now, but we will have a Kickstarter later this fall after the typed word versions are released is all I will say about the Kickstarter.
Nice. I figured you did. So I was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then this one kind of goes along with what we're kind of chatting about, but what is the spice level of your stories?
All of us, all the five of us, we all write first person, alternating point of view, present tense. And I would say there's a range of spice. Liz is the spiciest, and Erin is maybe the least spicy. I hope she won't mind if I say that she always has sex in there, but it's weird, is her phrase about that. So all of us will have open door.
I love that explanation. That's a good
yeah. All of us will have open door scenes. You know, there will be sex on the page. Just the pepper rating of it may fluctuate a little bit.
Nice. What about you, Cameron? What's your spice level of your books?
I guess I'm a four. I don't know. I'm whatever Dylan says she is, that's what I am. I would say we're pretty close in our.
I think that it depends too. Like the Why Choose ones, I think, are spicier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's more to go around. I gotta get a lot more creative with the words. Yeah. Because I can't say that over and over again. I definitely am. I think I'm a solid four, and then sometimes it's four with kink, in essence, right? But
yeah.
I don't really know what a five would be.
I mean, Sierra Simone, probably, right?
Oh, Sierra Simone. She is my, that's who I aspire to be, man. That's like my goal. She's my goal. She's my ultimate goal. She's on my goal board. Invitation.
As far as heat level or.
No, invitation to write with Sierra Simone. It's right underneath my dollar figure for my little goal menu, man. That's like,
wow.
She's my ultimate right there. So yeah, no, I don't. I love her.
so then I wonder if you write a book and hear her heat level and be like, let's do this. And like, hey, read this and let's do this together.
Well, she's collaborating with her best friend, Julie Murphy. Mm-hmm. And Julie's like closed door books. And I'm finding like the love child between them, that these books are just perfect. They're funny.
Wow.
They're witty. They're wrong.
So is it like if she's a five and her best friend's a one, is it like a solid three that their book ends up being? Or
some of them are like a four. Or it's the Christmas notch ones. I love them.
Yeah, I would say they're a four. Sierra's got I gotta gain about 20 more IQ points to get up to Sierra's level. But it's okay though. Yeah. I'm going to.
We have time.
All right. Well, I'm going to read a little bit from my whip, and I don't know if I've read this already yet. So we'll just do that. I'll just do a little bit and then we'll chat some more. So I'm going to mute you guys here. Put me up. Okay. All right. So this is completely raw, unedited. And so don't judge me. And this is the first chapter. I'm writing it for my agent. So just so you know, don't tell her I read it to you guys early. And it's an American historical. Dear Corlia, the women in this town are positively desperate for your advice. Please report to me by noon tomorrow so we can work out this week's edition of Miss Elliot's Musings and discuss ideas for your next assignment. And trust me when I say, don't wear your favorite gown. Sincerely, Miss Margaret Elliott Mason. Corillia Wimbledon, Cora, to those she really liked, read her letter and adjusted the package of baked goods in her hands as she navigated the streets, trying desperately to find an idea that might excite her employer. But for the life of her, she couldn't discover one. But they would figure it out, and that meant she was going out on assignment. And if there was anything Cora loved better than indulging in a sinfully delicious donut while reading her latest article in Miss Elliott's Musings, an advice column for the fair sex in Dodge City, it was getting assigned a news story. After all, Cora was well on her way to becoming the most sought-after news reporter around. Well, at least as popular as those pesky males would allow a woman in her profession to be. Still, reporting on crinoline cages and the latest fashion in Paris were a step toward her actual goal, being the lead investigative reporter in Dodge City for all things scandalous. But so far, only that blasted Mr. Wright from their rival newspaper reported on such things. Cora adjusted her round, wire-rimmed glasses and reread the summons for perhaps the 10th time that morning. Don't wear her favorite gown. All sorts of possibilities flowed through her mind. Oh, perhaps she was finally getting to investigate the cattle yard like she'd suggested months ago. Then again, that story had already been blown wide open by Mr. Wright. Blast. More likely, they were setting up the typeset for the week's pamphlet. Cora turned the corner to the road where her newsprint shop sat, only to skirt around two women chatting just outside the mercantile. "I'm telling you, this is the best way out," one woman said. "You may have to marry him, but it's better than making a living on your back." Cora snuck a glance at the woman, who were no doubt ladybirds. By all accounts, you wouldn't be able to tell the women made their money on their backs, except for those rose-colored rough coloring on their cheeks. See, I told you it was raw. And a hue that would only grace their faces if they were 5 days into a 10-day fever. No lace or silk peeked out of their bodices, and the color of their cotton dresses were quite plain. The woman who hadn't spoken sported a shiner that looked fresh, covered only by a dusting of talcum and in an ill-fated attempt to hide the wound. Poor thing. "Madam Nightingale will find you a husband, and then you won't have to deal with it anymore. Work for her, and this will never happen to you again. She's sort of a matchmaker for women like us." Cora tapped her finger on her chin and continued on her way. Something deep inside her gut told her there was a story here, but she would have to do some more digging before she pitched it to Margaret. The little bell above the newsprint shop door jingled, and Cora hurried inside, stopping to read a paper hanging to dry while her boss's husband's apprentice worked to get the latest news report stamped onto the cream newsprint pages. Nothing for inspiration there, but she had a secret weapon. She tucked their rival newspaper under her arm so the apprentices wouldn't catch sight of it as she snuck by. "Good morning, Mr. Mason," Cora chimed and tucked the newspaper into the folds of her skirt and bustled past his desk. "Miss Wimbledon," Mr. Mason greeted, not even looking up from the wide-eyed, distracted stare at his blank paper. Ah, writer's block. Cora had suffered that several times throughout her life. If it weren't for the birds chirping for her day, she might have let his mood affect her. But today she'd woken up happy as ever and ready to work. Cora tipped her mouth up in a crooked smile as she bounded up the stairs and settled into her usual chair in Miss Mason's parlor. "Cora!" Millie and Tilly, Mrs. Mason's twin daughters, chimed as they floated into the rooms, their dresses dusting the floor. "Mother will be here in a few minutes. Did you bring it in?" Millie sat down at the side table next to Cora. The young girl's eyes shimmered while she opened the parcel. "Bear sign." Cora pulled the pastries from the bag and handed one to each girl and then sat back to open the rival newspaper. "These are just donuts," Millie complained. "Not just any donuts. These were made by the cook at the stockyards. He told me that out on the range, the cowboys call them bear sign." "You've been over there investigating again?" Tilly asked and then nibbled on her pastry. Cora slouched. No, just checking up on the after effects of the Stockyard story. That blasted reporter from Murphy's Prints stole the story. I mean, who uses the pen name Mr. Wright anyways? Does he think he's being funny? She snapped the newspaper open and scanned the contents for Mr. Wright's story, stopping briefly at the image of a saloon. Wait, did that say doxology? She squinted as she reread the article about Madame Nightingale. Wait, that was the madam the ladybirds were talking about earlier. Interesting. Take a look at this. Mr. Wright just did an article on this saloon that provides church services on Sundays to the girls that it employs. She quirked her mouth up, the birds chirping just a little quieter on her day. He's probably a frequent patron of Madame Nightingale's. I'm sure he takes his Sunday services there after a night of debauchery. Okay, so Cora was exaggerating. He could very well be a nice man, but he still stole her Stockyard story, although she had no idea how he got it in the first place. He sounds like a horrendous blowhard, Millie exclaimed, her mouth full. This is not the proper way for a lady to speak, Margaret chastised as she hurried into the room, holding a tea tray. I wasn't aware I was raising cowboys. She punctuated her words by setting down the tray and handing the girls each a small plate and then rolling her eyes and setting the second plate back onto the tray when Millie popped the rest of her donut in her mouth and smiled guiltily back at her mother. Tilly set her pastry down next to the paper she'd brought with her while Millie turned a faint shade of pink. Sorry, Mama. Cora adjusted her wire-rimmed glasses as Margaret sat and smoothed her already crisp day dress around her chair. The woman didn't just wear Dodge City's newest fashion trends, she set them, which was one reason she'd started her secret project. Mrs. Elliott's Musings, using her maiden name, of course, so no one but those in the room currently would know that Mrs. Mason was indeed the scandalous Miss Elliott. And Cora, her dedicated journalist. Margaret sat down with all the regality of a queen and waved towards the girls. Ideas, go. We've received a letter about a woman desperate for a husband. She's had 4 failed courtships and no idea what brought it about. Tilly scanned the letter she'd brought. Judging by the overuse of adjectives in this letter, my guess is she's got a horrible personality. Okay, anyone else? Margaret glanced at Cora and Millie. Desperate for her story, she glanced around, her gaze resting on the article of the church-going prostitutes. Have you heard of Madame Nightingale's birdcage? I've heard rumors, Margaret nodded. Well, apparently they have a high marriage rate. Yet here, our ladies scouring the social market are having difficulty catching a husband. What if we combine the two? How to find a husband. In 10 ways, Millie exclaimed, shirking down when her mother sent her a scowl. What? Women need more than one way to find a husband. Otherwise, there wouldn't be such a difference between the social market and the birdhouse. The corner of Margaret's eyes creased the way they did whenever she considered a story. I like it. Coralia, you will go undercover to find 10 ways in which to catch a husband. Each time you will pick out a target and convince him to want to marry you. Report back on how you went about securing their proposals. Our readers aren't necessarily ladies of the first water. I've had a few grass widows, divorcees, and ladybirds write in. Let's find a way for a lady of any caliber to catch a husband. Start at Madame Nightingale's. But Cora? Yes? This is a particularly dangerous story to get for a woman of your caliber. You don't have to necessarily go into the brothel. You can, of course. I admire your determination and dedication for eliciting the truth. Perhaps you can befriend a ladybird who might divulge some information, or maybe one of the patrons. Your true intent must not get discovered. Otherwise, your reputation will be ruined forever. Are you up for this? Cora's heart beat hard. not for fear of going undercover at the whorehouse, because let's face it, that's where she was going, but for having to put herself out there on the marriage market. She enjoyed matching her dresses with the ballroom wallpapers and studying the pompous puffins and marriage-minded misses of the social scene from her corner. That's how she got through each dance. But she would do it for the story. She straightened her back and gave a single nod. Absolutely. Excellent. First, we need to outfit you for Madame Nightingale's. You're going to need to go in looking like you're down on your luck and need a job. That way the girls might talk to you. Margaret eyeballed Coralia's proper dress. Girls, let's pull out our old tattered dresses and see what we can find. She eyeballed Cora. We're going to make you look desperate. But remember, you don't have to go inside if you don't wish to. Cora gave a single nod, her mind running wild and the adrenaline she got from going undercover coursing through her veins. As long as she could navigate the story without getting discovered, or married for that matter, then this was going to be fun. Okay. That's my whip.
That was fun.
Okay, I just like giggled when on the line where it said something like, judging by the number of adjectives she's or something. I don't remember exactly how I kept saying it over my head, so I would be able to repeat it, but I love that line. Like, I feel like that needs to be the line that comes out for like the tagline of,
you know. Yeah. Yeah, that's fun. I love writing my historicals. I'm so excited to like get back to it. That's what, like, I don't know about you guys, but for me, writing is therapy. I get like really wound up and anxious, and I really want to just punch everybody in the face if I don't get a couple words in every day, which is probably why I'm anxious this week, because I didn't get any words out. But yeah, for me, that's it. But yeah, so we do have a couple more questions, and then we're actually getting short on time again. It goes pretty fast. Let's see. Okay. What's the most difficult part of writing a book?
Every time I get to like 3/4 of the way through a book, I convince myself I will never finish it. It's terrible garbage. I should just throw it all in the trash can and go find a different job. And then I go and I find a writing friend and they're like, Lainey, you're wonderful. You've got this. I'm like, ugh, okay. And then I get through it. But I always reach that point, like 3/4 of the way through a book, where I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah. It's like the sagging middle only. Mm-hmm. The sagging middle is kind of stretched out towards almost the end. Yeah, I've been there. What about you, Cameron?
I'd say any time that I write something that I kind of like I start picking at something, it's kind of hard to say. Like if I like write a character, like a female who, you know, has a lot of like emotional trauma. I think the deeper that I get into a character, the more I fear that there's going to be readers that just like, the deeper the character is, the more the readers are going to attack like whatever the insecurity is or something. So then I start, and then it starts putting blocks up on me while I'm writing, because I'm like, you know, I'll talk to my editor all the time and I'll be like, they're going to hate this. They're going to hate her for this, or they're going to hate him for this or whatever. And so it's like, do I back off? Do I back off on it? And so every time it's been fine so far, but because I've had like 1 or 2 reviews in the past that like kind of picked at something where I thought it was like kind of not real deep, it kind of scared me. So now that puts blocks up in my head as I'm writing, if I, you know, kind of try to write something a little bit different.
Nice. I'm gonna pop this question up with from Dylan. Oh yeah, and then I have one more, because this one kind of goes off this. But wait, I think she did another one and almost did the other one. Okay. Which book of yours should a new reader start with?
Well, if you like angsty new adult sports romance, you should start with Sweet Distraction. But if you're like more lighthearted stuff, I think you should start with my book, Fireball.
Mm. Thank you. Sweet. Oh, Cameron, you have it. That's right.
I got your Kickstarter.
Oh my God. Yeah. That was the Tepesh editions I did on Kickstarter.
I know. And you're the whole reason why I have my own.
Yeah.
I know. These are ladies. There's more. But yes.
Okay. And
let's do this
one.
Yes.
The signings will be, you'll be at this year.
Yes. I want Lady to answer this specifically because.
Well, Cameron and I will both be at Writers on the River in Peoria.
And we're sharing a table right now. Yay!
We'll be right, like literally next to each other. I'm also going to Readers Week Denver.
Me too.
Yeah, so we'll see each other there. And then I will be at Beyond the Read in Columbus, which is in May.
Yeah, and Dylan's going to be at Writers on the River as well as Romance, Rock and Romance Readers. And I'm going to be at Rock and Romance Readers in August.
And Dylan will be at RTD, at Readers Week Denver, I think. She says me too, but I don't know where that came in.
I know for sure she's at Writers on the River and Romance, yeah. Rock and Romance Readers. I'm not sure if she's still going to Readers Week Denver or not. I don't know if she decided.
Yeah. Someone in the chat asks, Cameron, are you signing in Green Bay next year?
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm assuming you're alluding to the one that you sent me, and it was all genre, and I don't do all genre. I've already done all genre before, and so I stick with romance now. I attempt to only support my romance babes. I mean, that's not true, not support, but
yeah.
Okay. I like it when all the readers know what they're coming for. They're not surprised by man chests on the thing.
The travel this year for the ones I'm doing, it is making me nervous. I would like to stick to stuff that's like within 5 hours driving from me next year. So we'll see. That's a lot of options. I'm pretty lucky where I am, you know, in Pittsburgh.
You know, I'm sorry. So I went to Kansas City this year. That was the first time I went to Kansas City. And everything I've done so far has all been, well, it's not necessarily within driving distance, but I have made it a driving distance thing. So like even this year, I'm driving from Colorado to Peoria, and then we're doing like a 2-week road trip because there's 2 weeks in between Writers on the River and Romance, Rock and Romance. Mm. But you're absolutely right, because I talked to this woman at Flirty, at Kansas City, and I was like, I haven't figured out the whole, you know, like flying, like the whole doing signings and flying thing. That just seems like way more work than driving for 3 days.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's the books, man. It's the books. I have a friend who lives in Denver, and they're going to be receiving my huge carton of paperbacks on their front porch tomorrow, maybe. And I think I'm going to drive to Peoria because it's like 4 hours for me to get to Columbus, and I'm meeting another author there. And I think we can carpool then the rest of the way to Peoria. And to me, that just seems easier than paying to FedEx a carton of books somewhere. I don't know why, but
So far that's how I'm feeling too. How many events have you been to, Dawn?
Honestly, I haven't been to any recently. My husband was in the military, obviously. Mm-hmm. So he was deployed constantly. So I did a couple RWA events back in the day. He retired in 2021, and we're still kind of getting settled. So I'm hoping this year I can kind of quit all of my day jobs and kind of settle in, and then start planning out events to go to. So yeah, the military got in the way.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to wholeheartedly endorse, and I think Dylan will too, the Rock and Romance Readers in Knoxville for 2025.
Oh, yeah.
I should sign up for that.
I've never been to Knoxville, and I would really like that.
I love the people that run it. Jackie is amazing. I just have really enjoyed them. So this will be my second year. And then I haven't told them I'm coming yet for year three, but I'm pretty sure I will.
Nice.
And then I know Dylan, well, you know, you've probably been to Writers on the River. She's the one that roped me into that one because she says it's amazing. So
I haven't been to it yet. Sarah Whitney is the one who told me I have to go, and I'm staying at her house. So that
there you go.
Oh yeah. I was going to ask, Dawn, do you have a sense where most of your audience is located? Like, are there events near, you know, some of your fans that we should consider?
Not really. I think it's more of an age group for my fans versus an area. I'm hoping there was a Montana one here, I think last year or the year before, that I didn't get to go to, but I'm hoping they do another one. So another book event there. I love doing Montana anything, but yeah.
And I really want to come to Montana. So just make sure you let us know when that happens. So that way we can sign up for it. Cause I want a reason to come to Montana.
Yeah. And I'm just saying for all you Yellowstone fans, Rip will be back here in May. So just saying, I've seen him before in person. I acted on Yellowstone. So
that's right.
Yeah, and they're scheduled to be back here in May for the summer. So if anybody wants to visit, I have a trailer, I have an RV you can stay in.
So Dawn, you know, that's really funny that every time I see you, I think about the conversation that we had before you were able to announce that you got to be on beginning of season 5, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I have still not seen season 5.
I know. I mean, there's something so crazy about it.
Yeah. Go ahead. It makes sense to wait until the second half comes out.
Yeah,
I think.
Right? Yeah. So it was like, there was so many rumors flying around Montana, like Matthew McConaughey is coming here, right? Like that's the rumor. And it still kind of is.
Is he in the spinoffs?
So the rumor here locally was that he was going to be taking over Kevin Costner's.
You can't just replace John Dutton at this point.
Nope, they weren't going to replace him. They were just going to be like, he died. And then Matthew McConaughey kind of like slipped in as another character.
A different cowboy.
But now, I mean, I'm even getting emails from the extras casting saying, we're coming, you know, and in the real estate world, all of the background people booking houses, rentals are like, we're looking for rentals. We'll be here in May and we're leaving in August. So I'm just saying, if you want to come here, Darby, I'm about a mile away from the set. So I'll take you over there.
May to August. I like it.
Inside.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, it's a beautiful time to come too. Everything's green and there's no wildfires yet.
We could plan out a shared world.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yes. In Montana, Dylan, let's go.
Yep.
As long as you don't still have your appointments.
You know what we didn't do yet this entire episode is reference a beaver. And we could write a beaver into our Montana books. Yes,
we can. We have lots of beavers here. I'm just saying.
It all works.
Yeah. Yeah. You're so right. We did not. We do have one more question and they lost it. So let me find it back. Okay, here we go. How do you celebrate your book release?
I'm bad about it. But I do celebrate. So I have my kids' Harry Potter wand. I'm sorry. I celebrate when I finish the book by eating something amazing that my family doesn't like. So last week, when I finished a draft, I ate the if you're in any Trader Joe's Facebook groups, everybody's always talking about the Trader Joe's lobster bisque pasta. I was like, I'm making that. I don't care how much it costs. I'm celebrating.
Yay.
So I ate that and it was just for me. I didn't share.
That's the best. Cameron, what about you?
I actually don't as well. Actually, it's been something that I've been talking about a lot. And I think literally just yesterday, I don't remember whose post it was, but I commented about this in a post that it's something I've been thinking about a lot because I release so often, I just have made it another Tuesday. And, yeah. And as soon as I hit send to, well, not send to my editor, but as soon as I hit upload, so after I've done all the edits and I've accepted everything and I hit upload, within an hour, almost always, I am right back to opening Scrivener and opening up the next manuscript. So I'm not celebrating them at all, which I think mentally has definitely been a huge problem over the last couple of years, because it's literally just a factory of sending stuff out. So, Lainey, it's funny that you said that you know, you eat something, because that's what somebody said was like, just, you know, have a, you know, a meal, or just have like even a dessert that you wouldn't normally have or something. So it's like, I even something small, I need to make it special. So I like this idea. Of course, mine will probably all go around cake, because I love cake.
Ooh, isn't cake the best?
What about you?
Whiskey. Not actually whiskey, wine. I take a drink. I get a drink. I some wine and I relax.
Nice.
Yeah, usually.
I get a gluten-free cupcake. That's what Dylan says.
Oh,
I didn't know Dylan was gluten-free. Look at that. Learn something new.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be gluten-free too, but I'm not very good at it.
Gluten is so good. That's what makes it good.
You know, there are fantastic flourless chocolate cakes that you could get.
Yeah, I just need to find a really good bakery that does it, and then just know I have a place to go. It's more the idea, the prep of it.
Yeah. Colorado is the place to have a dietary restriction, though, because it seems like you can get whatever there.
You know what? So is my daughter's future college. She signed up for MSU here in Bozeman this year. We toured it this summer, and they literally cater to every single food sensitivity. They have a restaurant for everybody there. And I'm just like, you're not going to starve, daughter. You'll be fine.
Yeah, that's exciting though.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, we are over time, like as per usual. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us. And then thank you, Dylan, for joining us in the comments. I hope you're feeling better tonight. Oh, or a special brownie, Dylan.
Yeah, it's actually funny that Dylan said that, because when you said you should be able to get everything in Colorado, I'm like thinking, yeah, the kind of bakeries we have here, I can't have any of that stuff. So
I went into one of those one time. They had something called a pot pie, like not a pot pie.
Yeah, a pot pie. Yeah. Yeah, you got to be careful if somebody offers you a lollipop here. You got to be real careful. Like,
what a time to be alive.
Yes. Oh, funny. You guys
love
are
you, Dylan. Tracking you.
Yeah. All right, ladies. Well, we're going to say goodbye. What are you giving away real quick? Lainey, what are you giving away?
Yeah. So if people follow me on YouTube, at my YouTube channel is at author Lainey Davis, I will give away a paperback of Since You've Been Gone. If it's in the US, I'll sign it. And if you're international, I'll have to drop ship it from the printer.
Yes. So, okay. So I had to read what we're doing. Dylan's set it up. Romance Happy Hour. We're giving away a $5 gift card. And you just have to leave a review on our Facebook page. You can find all of that information on our Facebook page for the giveaway, and enter Lainey's giveaway and the Romance Happy Hour giveaway. And again, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. And we will see you next time.
Bye, lady.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Romance Happy Hour.
To find out who's coming on next or catch up on the video episodes, visit our website at romancehappyhour.com.
Don't forget, you can always join us live on the second and fourth Thursday of each month on the Romance Happy Hour Facebook page.
To connect with Dawn or me, check the show notes for our contact info.
We'll see you next time. Cheers!